I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Jacques Pepin. We have senior contributors Alex Provence and Christopher Prosperi. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Jacques, it's so great to have you here.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Tell your friends, no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. And here is a heads up. We are very engaged in our Facebook page in a new and important way, and we are having conversations with you. You are sending us stuff. It is so much fun, and so you are going to find stuff about Jacques up on our page right now. So people can be surprised that the former chef to the president of France invented a way for us to use store-bought pizza dough as the crust for an apple tart. We have that apple galette recipe at our website right now, faithmiddletonfoodschmooze.org, and you will find detailed information about Jacques' newest cookbook from his PBS TV series, Jacques Pepin, Heart and Soul in the Kitchen. How about this? Using store-bought tortilla chips to make goat cheese sun-dried tomato tostadas, coating camembert cheese that you buy in the market with pistachio nuts and dried cranberries, escarole that seems so neutral, so common, with a black olive and caper dressing to boost it up into something very special, eggs baked in pepper boats. These are peppers you cut in half. The eggs go inside with things. Escargot inside baked potatoes. Veal chops Dijonnaise. It's just a little mustard and a few things. How about microwaved maple sweet potatoes crisped under the broiler? These and so much more. Our good friend Jacques Pepin is with us. Welcome back, Jacques.
Thank you. Did I do all of that in there?
You did. I don't know. You
oh,
did.
My God.
You
okay.
did. And without wine, I'm told. It's just amazing.
That's probably a lie.
Okay. So let's start. We'll start at the beginning where you're beginning to do the appetizers. Chris and Alex, these are goat cheese tostadas. You know, either the cups, the tortilla chips you buy, either the cups or the flat round ones that you get to that are crispy. Jacques, tell us about this. The ingredients are goat cheese, the shells, sun-dried tomatoes, the ones in the oil, right?
Right. Well, you can. Actually, I dried some this weekend because we bought like big $3, the big bushes at Bishop here. Just cut them in half, put them in the oven. That's at 200 degrees. I leave them like 4 hours. And I like them when they are not dry yet. They're still a bit soft. So I put them in package in the freezer. And when I take one, I put it in a container with olive oil and use it in a week or so. So, you know, thing like this, like in there, I use the tortilla. There is the tortilla plana, I mean flat, and the one which has kind of undulated. So either one, but you use it and put some goat cheese or cream cheese or anything you have hanging around.
I love this, you know, because you're taking the goat cheese and you put it in the microwave 30 seconds and it softens it up.
Yes.
And then you spread that cheese on the tostadas, sprinkle on those sun-dried tomatoes and olive oil, some pepper, some chives, a little more olive oil on top, and you can break these up into pieces.
Exactly, and I get credit for it, and I did nothing at all.
I know.
Just take stuff from the supermarket.
But those are the best recipes.
Right.
Right? The ones where you don't have to spend all day in the kitchen, and you can spend time with your friends and family.
I mean, a series that I did before, two series actually called Fast Food My Way. That's what I did. I used the supermarket as a prep cook.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris, you know yourself, in a restaurant, you have the guy coming in the morning to bone out the chicken, bone the fish, light the mushroom, chop the shallots. And so that you can go to the stove and you pick up that fillet of salt, you put shallot on top, a bit of white wine, you cook it in 3 minutes because someone did that preparation. So, you know, if you go to the supermarket and buy skinless, boneless breast of chicken, pre-sliced mushroom, pre-washed spinach, yeah. then you can do that. Like if you had a prep using the supermarket or the prep yeah. cook and doing things relatively.
And that's the mystery. And that's the mystery of a restaurant. People yeah. think that one person does everything, and they're like, "I can't believe you do this." And I'm like, "No, there's 40 hours of manpower labor there every day
right.
doing that kind of work, uh-huh. and then we just 3 minutes put it on a cook it, put it on a plate, and
right."
So yeah. let me jump in here and say this is something anybody can do. This is what our theme is on this show. These are the recipes Jacques likes to cook for family and friends. So while Jacques, obviously, as cooking as the chef to the president of France, knows how to do a thing or two in a complicated way, and it's extraordinary when he does, he also knows how to take the simplest things the way we all want to do, give them a few twists, and they're fabulous. So this is camembert. Cheese here with a pistachio crust. So your ingredients are the pistachio
yeah,
nuts,
a bit of honey, yes.
the camembert cheese, and you say good to get it from France, honey, dried cranberries, and crackers for serving.
Yeah, I mean, basically all of that has to do with the quality of ingredient, you know. And if you have a great camembert, or when I do a big party, I did my bull party, I do that with yeah. a brie de Meaux, you know, that 3-pound brie,
mm.
big, big one, you know.
It's
so
good.
As long as you leave it outside, you know, it's really ripe, then brush it with a bit of good honey so it sticks, and then you put pistachio around. I chop them coarsely, or you can do any other type of nuts, and you press them around and on top, so that goes with it, and all... Even when you do it, you know, you have your, like we were doing it the other day, and Gloria said, well, the honey is leaking all over the plate. I said, it doesn't matter. All the edge, cover it with the dry cranberry and dry sherries. And so the dry sherry, the nuts, a piece of cheese goes well together.
And it looks like you did that on purpose.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, thank you for saying what you just said, because at Boulle, when I'm eating that cheese, I think, how is this at the most perfect temperature? How did you do this? And you're saying you take it out earlier,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes, you do. The same thing, I do a big tomato salad there at the bowl. I buy the tomato like a week ahead, you know?
You do?
Make
good,
sure they're
big heirloom
ripe.
Tomato, and I leave them like for almost a week there, really to ripen. And,
do you guys eat all 3 pounds of cheese?
We eat.
Oh, yeah.
We do.
Like 50 people.
Ask him. We plow through food.
Oh, yeah.
It is... It's insane. It really is insane. Uh-huh. And there is wine?
A little bit of wine.
Okay, yeah. So, but the bull match lasts for about 14 hours.
Oh, yes.
So it's an endurance event.
Okay, here is something that I would love to be schooled on. And this is your discovery, for me, of pressed caviar mm-hmm. canapés. What is this pressed caviar?
It's an interesting thing because when I worked in Paris in the 50s, that was relatively common. I came and I worked at the Pavillon in New York. It was very common. Then I worked at the Russian Tea Room in the 80s, and it was also common. And you would have, like, the greatest caviar, of course. When we say the word caviar, it's sturgeon eggs, you know. Otherwise, you have to classify salmon caviar or whitefish caviar.
The best. Yeah.
So caviar is sturgeon. So the biggest one, the beluga, is, of course, the largest of all, can be 1,500-pound big beluga. Then you have the Ocetra, smaller, and then the Sevruga. And then after that, you had the pressed caviar. So it would go from, I don't know at the time, from $500 a pound to $350 to $250 and eventually about $150 for the pressed caviar. At the end of the year, when they have those eggs which are overripe or underripe, of all of those three type of sturgeon, they push it together, resalt it, and press it.
It's a blend.
And, yeah, it's a blend of all those eggs. Repressed, so it's almost like tar. There is no more eggs.
That's crushed.
It's very smooth. Mm-hmm. It's very smooth like tar. So you can freeze it. That's already something. And good. And then when you get some, you can press it and roll it between plastic wrap. For example, I do in a very, very thin wafer, and I cut a nice round of that to put on a salmon tartare or whatever, something like that.
Oh.
And it is relatively inexpensive. This is the one that I do here. I show them how to do the recipe, so that company is doing it now because, as strangely enough, as I said before, I ask so many young chefs, they've never heard of Payushnaya.
Yes,
Payushnaya Express Caviar. Mm-hmm. It used to be common, but it's not anymore.
Years ago, right?
But, you know, this spring, I had the catalog of... Petrosian in New York, mm-hmm. and the beluga is not there anymore because it's against the law unless you have it black market, whatever. So the best of the Ocetra, the largest X2, was $12,000 a kilo, 600 of them. So, you know, when you get into those, which are domestic caviar, it's about $40 an ounce. It's about $150 for a 4-ounce can, which is relatively, you do a lot.
Wow. Let me tell you, Jacques Pepin is back on the Food Schmooze party with his newest book, The Food He Makes for Family and Friends. And it's based on his PBS series. It's called Jacques Pepin, Heart and Soul in the Kitchen. His easy knockout recipe is at our website right now to use store-bought pizza dough and jarred apricot preserves to make an apple tart called an apple galette. Anyone can make this, as you will see at foodschmooze.org or on Facebook. So sometimes I think we should have done also this pressed caviar canapes. Yeah, this is just bread, sliced bread, with some mild onion and butter. So you butter the bread and then put the pressed caviar, sprinkle the onion on it, put the top on the bread, and then you toast these. Or you can toast the bread ahead of time, and you make these little pressed caviar canapes.
Yes, because...
How smart.
No, I show in that recipe how to do the real... Toast Melba, which Escoffier invented Melba, the soprano, the Australian soprano, I believe in the 20s or so. And you take a thin slice of bread, like Pepperidge Farm thin bread. You toast it first, then you trim it, then it's slightly gooey in the center. So you slide your knife in the center to separate the both sides. So it's super thin. You cannot cut the bread that thin and broil it because it would curl up and burn. It's too thin. But that was the way the real toast melba was done.
Sharp knife.
That's a good trick.
Going back to the classics.
Well, I'm interested in this pressed caviar. That's going to be my new thing. Escarole with tapenade dressing. Tapenade, of course, is the black olives and anchovy and capers and salt and pepper, that olive oil that is in the olives naturally. But then you add a little bit more. Escarole is such a neutral green. And I know many people find it a little bit boring. And you think, what do you want to do with this? So on the other side of this break, we're going to tell you about that. We're going to tell you about the eggs and pepper boats, how to do a broiled salmon with a simple, simple miso glaze, and this special thing, the pizza dough that you buy in the supermarket, how to make an apple galette. I cannot wait to get to that. So I'm with Jacques Pepin, Alex, and Chris. We are here on the Food Schmooze, and we'll be right back.
Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. I'll be ready.
I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. We are having the best time on Facebook. Just go to the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze and you will find it there. We're having conversations with you. We're posting constantly and loving your responses. So join us there on Facebook. And also, thanks to our talented crew, senior contributors Chris Brosberry and Alex Provence, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, producer Jonathan McNichol, and our special returning guest, we have Jacques Pepin. His new cookbook is out called Jacques Pepin, Heart and Soul in the Kitchen. And it is a compilation of the recipes that I know I have loved seeing on the PBS television series Escarole with tapenade dressing, Jacques.
Yes, well, the tapenade is pretty assertive. You know, it's a mixture of olive, of course. And, you know, one thing that often I've seen people doing a tapenade without capers, for example. Well, the word tapenade comes from the word tapeno in Provençal, which means capers. So there should be capers in it. So, you know, you have capers, you have black olive, you have, you know, anchovy fillet sometimes. So it's pretty assertive. And it goes very well with a crunchy kind of salad. Mm. Like, and you know what you can do? You can toss it together. For example, you broil the fish, and you put that right on top of the broiled fish. You know, that will go with it, you know, those type of combination. Oh,
yeah. This is your recipe for eggs in pepper boats. You could use those poblano peppers, or you could use regular peppers.
Yes, or the cubanelle, the long Italian sweet pepper, you know. And basically what you do, you cut them in half lengthwise, so you have two little containers if you want. Take the seed out and so forth. Put them into a skillet with like a third of a cup of water and cook them 4 or 5 minutes until the water disappeared so that they are partially cooked. Then put them hollow side up. And I put some, you can put any type of cheese in it, from mozzarella to cheddar and so forth. Break an egg on top and a little bit of hot sauce, and you cover it. And then the steam will cook it until they are nice and soft inside. A bit of cilantro or something else on top.
Here we go. Let's go to escargot in baked potatoes. Mm, is this a good idea?
I mean, escargot, you know, it's very French. And you get it. And a baked potato I love. So the baked potato, you know, if you really bake it, cut it in half, took that flesh out and mash it up with the butter and garlic and what goes into a beurre d'escargot, we call, you know, which is the parsley, garlic, butter, a little bit of anise or white wine. And then I restuff the potato with the snail and that potato and do a crust, put it into the oven. Good. So it's got to work well, you know. So
Jacques, now, if you're someone, there are people who get a little squeamish about escargot, about snails. Is there another?
Put something else in it.
Shrimp?
Put shrimp. The shrimp will be terrific.
Little lobster. Dice of
salmon, little pieces of meat, even chicken breast or whatever.
You think about how easy is that? You think about people coming over for lunch, and we think about standard things. Here is something that would be so outside the box and wonderful. There's nothing more comfortable than a baked potato.
Yeah, but the baked potato, I don't know if I do it in that one, I forgot, but that recipe. But what you do, you have a big baked potato, you put the oven on like 425. And then at the same time, you put those big baked potato in the microwave oven. 10 minutes.
With holes.
You do.
So
10 minutes. Do that in the recipe.
Yeah. So 10 minutes, it will take 10 minutes for that oven to come to 425. So 10 minutes, they are about cooked in the microwave. Then you put them into 425 for about 10, 15 minutes. They get nice and crusty. So you do it in like 20 minutes, a baked potato, which will take over an hour in the oven.
Jump starts it.
Yeah. The house smells good, too. So I love that smell.
That's what my wife invention.
She doesn't want to wait for dinner anymore.
No.
Let's move along. We're going into Jacques' new cookbook, Jacques Pepin, Heart and Soul in the Kitchen, photographs by Tom Hopkins, the Connecticut photographer.
Yes.
I'm with Alex Province and Chris Prosperi, my buddies here on the show. And here, this is a broiled salmon with miso glaze. Now, we first started to hear about this, not that it wasn't done before, from Nobu and the whole thing. And everyone thinks that this is something that gets done in restaurants, and we could never do this, Jacques. And here you are showing us that we can.
Yeah, that's very, very simple. And I put a piece of, you know, I buy that non-stick aluminum foil now, which is the best. You know? Mm. And then you put that only on one side. And the mixture of miso, of course, is that you can buy it in paste and you can keep it for 2 years in your refrigerator.
Right.
You know, it's a paste of beans, you know, of... And we have mixture of it, of soy and vinegar, too. But, you know,
And maple syrup, right?
I do other type of mixture, and it doesn't really matter. You brush the top, you put it under the broiler, not too close, so it has the time to cook. And about 4 or 5 minutes, it will cook the way we cook salmon now, which is relatively rare inside, nice and pink. That's how I like it for me. For my wife, I do it even roar, you know, because she really likes it. Yes, but it's great, and it's flaky, too. I mean, the salmon, when it's overcooked, like the tuna, you know, which are can get like a piece of cement, you know, I mean, kind of a block, you know, hard. So, yes, it's a very easy recipe, too.
So there is a shrimp burger on zucchini. I'm a nut about shrimp burgers. I like to make them, and this is a wonderful recipe. But I want to jump over to your Cornish hens a la Russe. You know, it's essentially we're talking about a baby chicken, you know.
Right.
So it's juicy, it's tender, it's got a lot of flavor. But if you if you're not getting, if you, your store doesn't have a baby chicken, you can use a Cornish hen.
Right.
So this a la Russe is the reference to the Russian style. So how does this
right.
go?
We used to do that at the Russian tea room or something similar. So you split it in half and you press it and cook it skin side down on a skillet. And I do, I have already have a couple of brick outside,
yeah,
the brick. I wrapped it in aluminum foil.
Yeah.
And you put that skin side down on a non-stick pan and
with
put
brick
those brick
on
top.
Yes.
And just cook it down so you have a flat, you know, that spread out the skin so it's flat.
The
and
best.
It.
Gets toasty
crispy,
and brown.
Crispy,
and
crispy. Oh, my goodness. So we're soon going to get into this season where something with a little cream in it is going to sound terrific. Chicken and cream sauce. So poulet à la crème?
Oh, that's well, my mother. So that would be more of a visceral dish for me. I mean,
yeah.
The taste of your youth, you know. So in the
chicken thighs, the,
yeah,
I love
exactly.
those. Yeah.
I mean, in the in post-affective memory, I mean, that's where those tastes become very important. So, yes,
yeah.
My mother would do that, my aunt and so forth. I mean, all of those women at restaurants in France. And here, I don't use the skin. She would have used the skin. But I feel that when I, if I brown something, the skin is nice too. But by the time you put moisture, the bricks soften and it gets mushy and all the fat comes out of it. It's not worth it. So I remove the skin, brown it nicely, and it's just an onion and maybe a clove of garlic, deglazed with a bit of white wine, finished with a bit of cream. It's really relatively simple.
It's so simple. It's a half a cup of heavy cream, but it serves four people. So think
right.
about that. Also, Jacques, when you do the chicken thighs, you want the bone in them, right? So
oh, yes.
to the flavor
Absolutely,
that bones
yes.
provide. Okay.
Yes, and, you know, I have done that recipe very often with half of the amount of cream, a quarter of a cup, like one tablespoon per person. So if you consider that you don't put any oil, any butter in it, and you have one tablespoon of cream per person, it's relatively
It's like a cup of coffee.
So, no, that's true.
No, people don't really understand that. One time I did a tour with the Cleveland Clinic for cardiac patients. And the guy said, can you do some interesting recipe? I said, yeah, I'm going to do that that fish in cream sauce. I said, are you crazy? I said, no. And what I did, I took a piece of cut fish, which I poached with a bit of white wine. And at that point, when the wine boiled, it evaporates. Most of the calorie goes anyway. And then I put some horseradish. Horseradish in it and I think olive, whatever, in a Russian style. And I finished it with sour cream. But I had 4 tablespoons of sour cream for yeah. 4 people. There was no oil, there was no butter, there was nothing in it. So it was relatively little. And, you know, people get crazy when you use that.
It's better than a salad with, like, a half a cup of blue cheese dressing on it, right?
No,
yeah.
True. People,
that's
so
and people
true.
Will choose
but that's
that
pretty
over
good,
a
though,
salmon.
Too.
Or even a plant toast salad. People yeah. end up putting 1.5 to 2 tablespoons of yeah. oil yeah. per person, which is, you know, 130, 40 calories per tablespoon of oil. So
we're going to talk about Jean-Claude, who is your best friend.
Right.
A man I have met, and the first time that I met him, really I thought I was going to die, because when Jacques was chef to the president of France, Jean-Claude was the pastry chef to the uh-huh. president of France. So Jacques is coming over to dinner, and I get a phone message on my machine,
oh,
and
remember,
it is Jacques
yes.
saying, Faith, I just want to say that if you don't mind, my best friend is here, Jean-Claude. You know, we've spent so many time together, and I'd like to bring him and his wife with Gloria because, you know, he was the pastry chef to the president of France. He's explaining to me so that I wouldn't think I was being invaded. So I staggered back from the answering machine and thought, oh, my God, what am I going to do? It was one of the best dinners I've ever had in my life.
You had veal chops. You had beautiful veal chops.
I did have veal chops. Yes, I learned.
So you cooked?
Well, here's what I did. I was going to cook. So I made the cream sauce bravely, and I took the veal out of the refrigerator, and I said to Jacques and Jean-Claude, I said, now, we have a choice about how to cook this. and they dove at that paper and took right over it, which was a dream for me because I thought I would die.
And then you got a glass of wine and watched.
Yeah, we had a very nice time. Right. So the reason I'm bringing this up is that Jean-Claude is connected here to this recipe featured in the book. You would think hamburger? Hamburger Royale. Tell me about this, Jacques.
Yes, because hamburger, everyone loves hamburger. So one time I was with him, and he goes hunting, you know, and he killed a deer every year with his bow and arrow. I mean, he's very big at that, but which I don't. First, I would miss anything. But we do hamburger, and I said, you know, I've done those hamburger taking a brisket of beef, and the whole brisket that is with the thick, fatty part of the fat on top, and you ground the whole thing, and that will be about 21, 22% maybe butter fat in it, and it makes a fantastic, you know, burger.
So this is iceberg lettuce, onion, ripe tomato, salt and pepper, ketchup and mustard, and then this is a mixture of brisket with garlic and then wonderful cheeses that you put on top. And so Hamburger Royale. And
yeah, it's interesting because when I did the show with Julia Child, I mean, years ago, we did that show on hamburger, which I really didn't want to do. She said, no, we have to do that. Well, maybe one of the shows that people love the best.
Oh, I remember.
I was much more American there. I always fight with her because I did. I said, I'm going to do the hamburger like we used to do at Howard Johnson. Yeah. So thick hamburger. I said, don't press on it. Did that too. And she did a hamburger in the French style. That is, she ground the meat, did a patty very flat, put onion chopped in it and cooked onion, put it in a skillet, press it down, you know, so it's like a piece of meatloaf. So we love about that.
So there's a pork schnitzel. So this is that crispy, you know, bread coating on the outside, except this is a crispy rice coating. And guess what Jacques is using to make the rice coating?
Rice Krispies.
He's using those packages of rice cakes that you get in the supermarket.
Oh, yeah, right.
Mixed with oh, is that what I did?
With panko or breadcrumb.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I'd get it that nice. Yeah, I did something one time with the onion, also fried onion that you get in can.
Yeah.
And, you know, you put it in the food processor also with the bread on a fish fillet, and it's very good.
That's a good one. Okay. I like that. Smoked ham glazed with maple syrup. That's
good.
Yeah.
I mean, the secret there is really to recook the ham. When you buy a shoulder or any of those ham in the supermarket, because you see, I use basically only supermarket food, the best that I can get, but supermarket food, because my point is that what I do is stitch cooking. When I was a chef, and if I were a great chef like, you know, Thomas Keller at Perse, you do a demonstration and you do something extraordinary, and your point is to entice the people to come to your restaurant. Whether they can duplicate it or not is relatively immaterial, because this is not my case. I don't have a restaurant, so I use stuff from the supermarket. But the pork that you buy, I mean, fully cooked shoulder of pork, for example, it's cooked to usually 138 degrees, I believe, according to USDA regulation. Mm-hmm. But that's not cooked enough. And it's good this way. It's not dangerous. But if you recook it, you lose maybe 8-10% of the weight. It took a great deal of the salt out. And slowly in water, like 180 degrees for a couple of hours. But the meat is so much more tender and good. So that's the first part.
And you let it rest in the water.
Yeah,
that's a good
thing. And then after you trim the leathery part from the underneath, but you keep the rind and score the rind and put that mixture on top that I did with the maple syrup, I think.
Ketchup, chili sauce, vinegar.
That's good.
Brush it all on and then bake for another 45 minutes, and there you go. Yeah. So this is beautiful, caramelized thing, what we all want. We have veal chops Dijonnaise. So veal chops with mustard, that's a beautiful combination.
Dijon is mustard, yes. So it's a question of the quality, again, of the veal and not overcooking it. I mean, we used to cook the veal at least until it was white. You know, that is medium. And we don't anymore. We do it nice and pink now. Not as pink. I mean, sometimes I have it like a steak, practically bleu rail. That's not too much, but but pink inside, yes, with a sauce with the mushroom, I think, and you know, mustard, a bit of cream.
So I hear you saying we don't do that anymore. I think this is a reference to you coming here to the United States in the 50s, right?
Yes.
And when we, you know, frankly, cooked the hell out of everything.
Well, we did,
including vegetables.
We did in France as well. You know, I mean, the fish and all that.
Did
too.
You?
Oh yes, absolutely. I mean, I remember cooking scallop. Cook scallop, you will poach them between 15, 18 minutes. Mm. That's what the way it was. And fish, too. That's the way the system was. I've never had raw fish until I came here, too, when I started having not only sushi, but certainly crab legs and stuff like that. So, wow, raw fish, but then...
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, more Jacques Pepin, more from his cookbook, and also an event that Jacques is doing that to benefit the Anna Grace Project. We'll explain as soon as we come back. Stay with us. Faith Middleton, our special returning guest is Jacques Pepin. His new book is out, Jacques Pepin, Heart and Soul in the Kitchen, which is out in connection with the television series. Chris Brassberry and Alex Provence are here, senior contributors to the show. And so we're going through these recipes. I want to take a moment, though, to tell you about something. And Jacques is involved in this. The Anna Grace Project, what is that? This is a nonprofit organization with a mission of spreading love and connection and community for every child and family. The organization's namesake, Anna Grace, is the beloved daughter of Jimmy Green and Nelba Marquez Green. Her life on Earth was ended at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012. Of course, this is, I think, forever etched in our collective conscious. So in the aftermath of something like this, Nelba and Jimmy have dedicated their lives to coming up with solutions to the kind of violence that took their daughter's life. They have said this widely. They believe that love and community are the antidotes for violence. So the Anna Grace Project focuses on these fundamental values through community programs. So mental health awareness, musical scholarships for students attending Western Connecticut State University, and on it goes. So here's what's going to happen. I think this is exciting. On October 3rd, Saturday, at Western Connecticut State University from 5 essentially till 11 p.m. Jacques and his wife Gloria Pepin are the honorary special guests. There will be a special music featuring Kurt Elling, John Patitucci, the drummer Louis Nash, and of course Anna Grace's father Jimmy Green. And do we have Melba on the phone?
I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Melba, thank you so much for being with us. I'm excited about this event. So this is the kind of thing that you do to fundraise to continue these projects.
That's right.
So now, what's the music going to be like?
It's going to be, obviously, Anna's dad with some of the most amazing, compassionate, life-affirming jazz musicians on the planet. I heard you mentioned all of them except Kenny Barron, who's a Grammy Award-nominated pianist who also performed on the CD that Jimmy wrote for in honor of Anna's life.
This is Jimmy, your husband.
Yes.
So I have heard that one of the pieces that he did and for to honor your daughter, and I almost You know, it's moving, of course, for the reason. However, it was the most stunning piece of music.
You know, everybody had a different response to this. I went to Washington. I promoted different types of legislation in both mental health and gun responsibility. And Jimmy sat and wrote music that honored her life, and it was just so beautiful. So we're so excited to have Jimmy and his friends and these amazing musicians, and Jacques and Gloria, who we love, who are two of the most, I know they're, you know, fancy foodies, and this is what the show is about, but what people don't talk about is what amazing humans they are, and I think that's what makes them so special to us. They're just two of the most amazing humans on the planet.
Yes. Jacques, how did you, all of you come together? How did you all meet each other?
Well, we met at the University of Hartford, and I got an honorary diploma there. And at the same table, Jimmy was there, and Nelba was there, and sitting next to Gloria, and both being Puerto Rican, both of them, they strike a friendship, you know. So, and she's so beautiful, and that poor little kid, you know, always make your heart bleed when you look at those pictures and what happened there. It's so, and we need so much reform, and that obsession with gun and so forth in this country, you know, I think it's terrible.
Yeah. Now, but there is something that must be lifting about making the world better in the aftermath of this kind of grief.
You know, Faith, I think a lot about Adam Lanza. And I think a lot about what our responsibility is as a society to meet the needs of children and young people and adults like Adam. And all of our programming really is programming that tries to reach all children. We don't put him in a different box. We say, okay, there are lots of kids out there that need our help. And how do we train teachers and professionals to not only identify these kids, but build relationships with them? Because social isolation is such a critical component that doesn't often get talked about. So, yeah, there is something uplifting. I feel like we are really doing things that are apolitical and that are common sense to reach out to children, adults, youth who really need us.
Well, that's one of the best things I think that anyone has ever said on this show, talking about the isolation of children and what that can lead to, and maybe creating a buddy system for kids who are different in some particular way. I know that's the kind of thing that these programs do, that get kids involved in all these things. I'm so grateful for your work. It's a pleasure to have you on the Food Schmooze, Nelba. And please say hi to everyone, and we're going to give everybody a website address now to go to if they would like to come to this, because I know it's a fundraiser.
For sure. It's www.annagraceproject.org, and you can get the information for the evening and buy tickets right on the website. And thank you so much for giving us this time to talk about it just a little bit.
Oh, it's the best. Thank you very much. It's called Jacques and Jazz. So thank you, Nelba. I hope I see you soon.
Nelba.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye. So we mentioned Gloria here. I know she will be the co-host of this event with you. And in your cookbook, which is called Jacques Pepin, Heart and Soul in the Kitchen, there is a recipe called Dirty Rice for Gloria.
Oh, yes. She loves rice. Uh-huh. She loves chicken liver, so we combine both of them. I mean, it's kind of a classic recipe, maybe not like exactly like mine, but in the South. And she liked all of that. I also did a fair amount of offals, you know, variety meats in there. Now the young chefs are getting to it, from chicken liver to calf's liver.
Organ meat, huh?
Yeah, to beef tongue and so forth.
I got to say, this rice, pancetta, olive oil, onion, the chicken livers, white rice, chicken stock, thyme leaves, paprika, and salt and pepper, and some peppers that are chopped up. You can make jalapeno peppers. Huh. You could do whatever you want in here. And
can't go
that's
wrong.
Very good. Very good. I don't know why I have never had Gloria's linguine with clam sauce. So I'd like to.
Oh, she's the best at that. Yes. Oh,
wow. Really?
Yeah.
The usual suspects, except listen to this combination of white wine, the hot pepper flakes, the parsley and chives, the black pepper, and if you like, some people, there's a big controversy about whether you're supposed to have shellfish with cheese or not, so it's up to you.
Oh, we like cheese.
So preferably Mexican oregano.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a difference, doesn't it?
Well, Mexican or Greek oregano, it's a bit more pungent, yes. And, of course, we open the clam. We don't serve it with the shell.
Can you explain
and
how you do it?
Well, the clam, there is a couple of different ways of doing it. You know, you can do it. I do it with a paring knife. But one way to help in the opening is to put them in the freezer for 15, 20 minutes. They are not quite frozen, but it's easier. If you don't want to do that, you put them in like 350-degree oven, about 5 minutes also. And you'll see they pop up in there. And they are still there. Barely lukewarm inside and still raw. Still raw. So you can slice your knife in it and open it. You can cool them again and then have them on the half shell. Or then put a sauce on top. I put sometimes a mixture of saute scallion or cannon.
Yeah, you explain that here. 350 degrees, 5 minutes.
Right.
And you can recool them. And you scrub them all first before you put them in, or no?
No, well, we always wash them, before. Yeah. Yes, sure.
Okay.
And the oyster, too.
Sweet potatoes. I just love them. So this very simple recipe for broiled maple sweet potatoes, consisting of the potatoes, unsalted butter, maple syrup, and salt and pepper, except you have this trick of doing them first in the microwave.
Yeah, a little bit like the baked potato. It helps. It's faster. I mean, not like I'm retired. I have time. But it's a bit faster. We pre-cook them and I think cut them in half and score them and finish them in the oven. It's an easy recipe. Yes.
And the oven is what gives them that crispness on the outside.
Yeah, a bit of the caramelizing.
I bet you've been waiting for this thing we've been talking about at the beginning of the show, and I've been using it as a teaser all the way through this, because it is Jacques' recipe for apple galette, which to me is like a rustic tart. And what this is he's using store-bought pizza dough that he buys at the supermarket.
Right.
And this is the easiest thing. Chris made this for us just before we came in. Peel an apple.
That's all you have to do is peel some
apples. A jar of apricot preserves.
Yeah, right,
How amazing is this?
So you can even do them with the skin on the apple.
Yeah, you could.
It's fine. Yeah.
And we have this posted on our website and on Facebook.
Right.
Really, honestly, it is so fantastic. Sugar, store-bought pizza dough. You can make it whole wheat if you want. Golden Delicious apples. Some unsalted butter and a jar of apricot preserves. How do you do?
Yeah, but the point is that we always do galette, what we call galette, a big open tart, you know, and with a pâte brisée, you know, a simple pie dough and so forth, or puff paste and all that. And it's very good, probably, maybe finer than that. But when I was a kid working in the mountain, you know, during the war, actually, I was sent to a farm. There was that big oven that the farmer did bread once every 2 weeks. So the bread, you kept it for 2 weeks. So all the farm from around brought their dough on that day. There was no yeast. They started with a lump of dough 2 weeks old to ferment it, and it takes 2 days to do what they call a rafraîchi. They add more flour in it and more water, and it develops. And eventually, all of those farmers would bring that big oven once every 2 weeks. They cook the bread for everybody. When everything was done, there were pieces of dough left. They would spread it out and cover it with one thing or another, and fruit. So the idea of the galette this way is not even, I mean, I remember that when I was a kid, you know, spreading it this way. Now you can buy that dough all done at the supermarket. It makes it easy. But, you know, you follow the season. You do apple, then you do pear, then you do peach, then you do rhubarb, then you do whatever you want as the season goes down on top of it.
Ah.
As long as you put butter and sugar on top.
Would you ever use frozen fruit?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter that much because it's going to be cooked.
And it gets a caramelization on the outside of the thing. And, you know, oh, my goodness.
And anything to get me out of making pie dough.
Exactly. I'm with you. I'm just a terrible baker.
But, you know, I started because I take that pie dough often when my granddaughter comes. I say, okay, let's do little bread. So I say, you cut it into a long, thin strip or little round things, roll it. Then sometimes we put some herbe de Provence or you know, Italian herbs on top and some olive oil, maybe a bit of cheese. Let it proof, put it into the oven to do different type of little roll with different shape. Then one time we say, okay, let's spread it out more. And if you spread it out, it starts, you know, it's a bit stringy. It starts coming back. So you let it rest on the table 5-6 minutes, then spread it more. then it's all this shaped and then cover it with, I have done it. I've covered it even with potato, you know, with sliced potato and garlic in it and finish it with cream on top and herb, you know.
So this cooking is a gift that you can give to Shori as love, as your talent. It's a gift to her.
It's a lesson from my grandfather.
Yes. But do you find that it is an opening to talk?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, this is the greatest maybe expression of what civilization is, the sitting down and sharing meal. At that point, you share a meal with people who may never talk to you in normal life. That may be the CEO of a company, or where next to it there is a dishwasher from the corner restaurant. But around the table, there is no distinction. Everyone speaks, you know. And the sharing of food is very, very important. So as a child, Claudine, you know, I hold Claudine in my arm when she was a year and a half, and I make her stir the pot. So since she stirred the pot, she, quote, made it, and she was going to taste it. Because I made it with Papa, you know, so. And something with the granddaughter, so I think it's important, yes.
Yeah, okay, so there is a recipe for instant orange cake. I love the word instant. So oranges with mascarpone cheese, a pound cake that is store-bought.
Sure, Sara Lee or other. You have some good pound cake.
A little orange liqueur or Grand Marnier and some orange marmalade and mint sprigs are a wonderful decoration. So here is a way, again, of using store-bought ingredients.
Yeah, so I think, if I recall, I don't know, I mixed the mascarpone, whatever, with a bit of sugar too. We have a bit of liqueur. You spread it on your pound cake, arrange your slice. I mean, the harder thing is to get the segment out of that orange properly, you know, or grapefruit, or whatever, and then put a bit of orange marmalade on top. You know, all of those type of desserts are easy and good for the kid. I mean, tartine, we call tartine, which is a spread of with dough, with bread, with dough, any kind of jam, and I do that with the granddaughter, yes.
Yes, and you also do, I think, did you have this growing up, that chocolate hazelnut sandwich?
Oh, yes.
Well, what is that called in France? Is it the 4 o'clock bread?
Yeah, exactly. Just the 4 heures. 4 heures means 4 o'clock. So it's the 4 o'clock tea for the British, you know. So when you come back to school, you had a piece of ficelle, you know, very thin bread or baguette with a piece of dark chocolate. You know, that was the 4 heures for a kid. You know,
And so this is the pizza dough again and hazelnuts, chopped bittersweet chocolate, a little bit of butter, just a little bit, and a little bit of sugar. And you make sandwiches, and this goes in the oven for just a little while under the broiler.
It's like a kind of calzone, you know, if you want.
Exactly. It's so wonderful. I mean, thanks to you, Jacques, I have made that chocolate baguette with butter and sea salt, with all kinds of things on top of it at the end of a meal. And people just are crazy about it.
But that's your recipe.
Well, it's kind of borrowed your idea.
Yeah, but is that the way it should be? You know, I feel that when people have a recipe, you should do it exactly the way it is in the book, regardless of who write that book, at least the first time you do it. If it turned out good, then you're likely to do it again. The second time, you take a faster look. By the third time, you, quote, improve the recipe. I want more tomato in there. I don't want it as thick. And by the time you do it a year later, you've done it 20 times. You massage it enough so it becomes your own recipe with your imprint. Yes. And you don't even remember where it come from. Yeah. That's a good progression, you know. Mm.
And that's teaching to cook.
That is teaching to cook, and I'm glad you said that because it gives us courage in the kitchen to keep trying, keep perfecting, just keep working at it, making it the best you can be. Everybody's got this group of the recipes that we trot out over and over again, and they stand the test of time, I think.
And maybe too much with young chefs, they talk about creativity in the kitchen, which usually means the combination of the weirdest possible ingredients, which is not necessarily
the best.
I mean, when a home cook has to cook every day for a family of six under a budget you know, under a time frame of an hour, varying your recipe and all that, that's a great deal of creativity going into this village.
But give that to most young chefs.
Bless you. Bless you for saying that. Thank you again, Jacques, as always. Jacques Pepin, Heart and Soul in the Kitchen, is his new cookbook. The recipe for the store-bought pizza dough, apple galette, is on our website and on Facebook, where we're talking like mad to you. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Here's to pleasure, my friends. And remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.